You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
This is Gash, a proud Patreon supporter of Ira Bell, and you are listening to this very special Listener's Choice episode of Ira Bell, a Star Wars Destiny podcast.
Forgery of Imperial documents, possession of stolen property, aggravated assault, resisting arrest.
On your own from the age of 15, reckless, aggressive, and undisciplined.
I rebel.
Welcome everyone to I Rebel. I'm your host, Jedi Geek Girl. We are on the Road to Worlds. It is an exciting adventure on the way to Worlds. The Legacies meta is developing. There is great diversity in regionals, and we will cover that diversity and all the regionals to date before Rivals drop in our next episode, which we will have a very golden guest to talk about those details. Before we begin and dive into our Listener's Choice episode, we would like to say thank you to every single one of you who has liked our Facebook page. This past week, we have reached 500 likes on our Facebook page, and it is quite an important milestone. Thank you to each and every one of you, no matter how you support us. We would also like to say thank you to our Patreon supporters, especially to our two newest Patreon supporters, Nate, and I'm going to butcher this name, Bernetta. Thank you for your pledge. It is because of you that I Rebel can continue to give back to the community and can continue doing the content that we do. It is our first Listener's Choice episode, and for this episode, our Patreon Gold members have voted, and they have voted to have this very special, one-of-a-kind man back on to Ivy Bell, the one, the only, Sugi from Knights of Ren.
Hey everybody, how y'all doing?
I'm doing good. I know I'm tired, and I know that you are too.
Yeah, it was a long drive coming back from Miami last night. We got in about 3:30 in the morning after a very long day of Destiny starting at... the shop opened at 9, but we were up at like 5:36 getting reps in. So yeah, it was a really good day, about a 22-hour day for us.
I have to say that I was working yesterday, so I wasn't able to watch all your coverage, but I did see some of your coverage here and there, and I have to say that you guys did a great job.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
I have to say that the Baba Seven Sister deck really interests me, and I thought it was very interesting seeing that deck come out and represent in the meta.
Yeah, that was a very interesting. So basically, the entire team from Tampa brought the exact same deck. The creator was named, his name is Mitchell Brantley. If you watch the video on our Facebook page, the long story short is he didn't have the cards he needed to build the Boba Phasma deck, but he did have the Seventh Sister. So he threw that together, and when they started testing, they just kind of realized that it's a very effective deck. It is very Jango Veers-y. I mean, like, I call it Jango Veers 4.0, just because, similar to old school Jango Veers, it's kind of an oops, I win it again style of deck. You either roll really hot and just throw out massive amounts of damage and just win, or you don't. There's not really a middle range for it. I mean, like, there's ways to roll some damage and then deal it, and you know, sequentially you're going to eventually potentially kill your opponent, but like the heart of that deck is trying to deal just a gratuitous amount of damage as early as you can in the game. In fact, Andrew Cox, the guy who won the entire event, he said in one of his rounds in the Swiss, he faced off against the Boba Sister, and they actually physically rolled 17 damage against him on turn one with one upgrade, which is pretty unheard of. With OTK, like, you could potentially use leadership and two Price of Failures, but then you only have one character, and this deck used one upgrade, killing no characters and just rolling the god roll. It has a massive damage ceiling without sacrificing your characters. It doesn't necessarily have the highest damage ceiling, because with OTK you can kill everybody, use your leadership to untap Sister up to three times, then you get all those secret droids out, you know, so on and so forth. It's a very explosive deck when it wants to be, but it also has some really bad matchups against decks with shields, where you're not going to be able to roll out the Maul Saber, which you're capitalizing on so that you can get not only the Boba Fett special to get 4 damage off of the plus 4 modified side from Maul Saber, but then you can spend the Maul Saber with a generic base side to deal, you know, at a minimum 5 damage, at a maximum 7. It's a really good deck. it's just not a consistent deck. And a lot of the decks we're seeing in the meta right now are extremely consistent, either by using cards, say like Sabine. Sabine and Yoda, you can use Yoda to flip Sabine into damage, or you can use things like Never Tell Me the Odds with the RI lock, or if you're running Infamous, you can do Ambush Shenanigans. So that's the consistency that Sabine has. You can do things with Zeb, Yoda, like Swamp Thing decks, and you can keep flipping Zeb into the dice he needs. Or if you use his rifle, since he can resolve his sticks as guns, he has the consistency of really whatever he rolls, he can resolve however he chooses. And then if you get a blank, you use Yoda to flip. So that's consistency. You've got the consistency of Hero Mill, where you're not really incredibly reliant on what you roll, with the exception of using Chance Cube and C-3PO to eat cards out of your opponent's hand. If you roll Shields on Rican, great. If you roll Focus on Rican, great. Whatever you roll with Yoda, you want, because choking their resources is good. Focus is good. Shields are good. Special is good. The Partisan is probably the weakest on the die rolls, but he's got a lot of really strong sides. Obviously, you want to roll the two indirect. If you hit the discard, that's good. Disrupt is probably the weakest side, but still, it's not a bad thing to keep your opponent choked, since a lot of these powerful, impactful cards are costing 2 to 3 resources. And then, of course, you know, he's got a dollar. So you're not like dying on your rolls for Hero Mill. So that's the kind of the weird consistency of that deck, is you're playing more the outs of the cards in hand and the ability to mitigate your opponent's damage, stay alive longer, produce shields, and use your cards effectively, and your dice aren't nearly as worryful. And then the hero vehicles, you just roll so many dice by odds of probability. You're just going to keep hitting damage. You can pitch cards to reroll to get more damage. You're just chucking astronomical amounts of dice, and generally you're slow enough that your opponent claims or just passes so much that you can almost play the game without any kind of inhibition. Obviously, your opponent can interact with you if they pass, which they should be. If you decide to claim and let your opponent run wild, do not do that. That's how you lose to vehicle. Like any vehicle deck, do not let them go unchecked, because you'll die. They will kill you. Smart players are just pass, 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 pass. But even still, like, your rolls aren't necessarily as important, because you can decide when and where to sacrifice the point in the turn where you claim versus expending resources in the attempt to hit the damage you want, but then your opponent might mitigate that damage. So you have to be careful. That's one of the few, probably the fewest decks in the game that actually has consistency problems. And of course, anything with Talzin right now is just really hot. Anything with Tarkin is also very hot, because he's got a lot of focus. So it's just an interesting kind of deck. Back to Boba's sister, it's extremely potent, it's extremely explosive, but it's extremely inconsistent, and that's really the clutch part of that deck. If you liked Jango Veers and you like explosivity, you like blowing people out turn one at the cost of might not happen consistently, and you might suffer in the Swiss, that's a great deck for you. If you want something really consistent but not as explosive, then you know, you're probably looking at something with Talzin, Tarkin, maybe something with Sister, because those ID9 Seeker droids have focus, and they're really good when you have two of them out, because a single die is 2 focus, and that's pretty nasty. So there's just a lot of things to consider, but the Boba 7 Sister deck is very unique. So 100% props. All the credit goes to Mitchell Brantley and the Tampa guys. They created that deck. They played the deck. They've brought it to the attention of the community, for which I'm very thankful, because there's not enough villain decks in the meta, I feel. And we're going to talk about like our top 5 favorite and not favorite cards, and a few of those cards kind of are in both of those lists for me personally. So it's nice to see villains hitting the top tables, just because Hero is extremely dominant right now, both because of the characters and the equipment they have, and the just insane mitigation cards that are available to heroes that villains do not have access to right now, which does make matchups extremely difficult when a single particular faction has superior control plays and removal spells, and then the villains do not.
I have to say that if you are interested in this deck, just by Sugi describing it and talking about it, be sure to check out his video on Knights of Ren Facebook page at facebook.com/Knights of Ren to check it out to find out more. Or if you would like to read it, I would like to announce that we are having the deck creator and the person who took the deck to top 8 read an article for iRebel, iRebelDestiny.com, so look out for that. Without further ado, let's dive into the topic that was suggested to us by some of our followers and supporters. The first being what you previously mentioned, our top 5 favorite and top 5 least favorite cards from Legacies. This was brought to us by Grayson on Twitter. Without further ado, which one do you want to start first? Do you want to start with least favorite or most favorite?
There's a lot to be said for both the good and the bad. And when I looked at the request, I didn't necessarily approach the negative aspect in the terms of this card is like bad, unplayable, that's why I dislike it. Just because there's a lot of cards that are just not playable right now that you could consider bad. So I looked at it like, what is my least favorite card in terms of why I dislike it, not because of its playability.
I was trying to do the same thing because it is so difficult narrowing down 180 cards to 5 favorite or 5 least favorite. My list consists of both playability and personal preferences. Like there are a couple picks that I picked on both of my lists that are personally my personal taste. Let's go ahead and start with the top 5 least favorite cards, starting with our number 5. What would you say is your number 5 least favorite cards from Legacies?
These are not in any particular order, so I don't want someone to go, oh my gosh, his number one is X, which these are all equally disappointing to me. So one of my top 5 currently is Newt Gunray. Now, I do know that there was a Jabba Newt Gunray Night Sister deck that was doing pretty well during the Miami Regional. It didn't top. I think it went 4-3. It might have gone 5-2. I never actually got to talk to the pilot. I don't know where they went. I was really disappointed because I wanted to actually like sit down and kind of chat with them, not necessarily like as an interview with Knights of Ren, but just personally as a mill player and be like, what are you doing? How is this working? Because in my testing, this deck just doesn't work. So the reason why Newt is actually on my least favorite cards is because when he first came out, we were all really excited. He has great points. So he's 8-11. His health is 8, which is fairly squishy, but I think that's fair for his effect. And the effect of this character is that each opponent gains 1 fewer resources during the upkeep phase to a minimum of 1, unless that opponent discards the top 2 cards of their deck. And at first I was like, oh my gosh, this is an amazing card. The die faces are mediocre. There's 1 indirect, which is awful. There's 1 focus, which is good. 2 disrupt, which is really good. A resource and a +1 modified resource and a blank. I would have killed to see that damage be, I mean, I would love to see another focus, just because this is a pure utility character. So seeing like double single focus would be great. I would have loved to see like a discard, or even, it's tricky because you need consistency. So it might be insane to say this, but I would have also really liked to see 2 base side resources and then the +1 modified resources. So he's a 50% chance of hitting a resource side, which you could use with things like bait and switch, logistics, or if you're running him with another character that makes money, you could run him with Sienna to make gratuitous money, or even Thrawn. I mean, like, these are things I wanted to see. So like, his dice are okay, not amazing. And the effect is like, wow, this is really good. I love it. It's impactful. It's going to do great things. It's going to, finally, we have a choke character that we can like really push that agenda. And then it's like, well, what I really wish the card had said was at the start of the game or during setup, this effect is active and then into the game, because your opponent starting the game with 2 resources and not milling really hurts Newt. If you had to pick at the start of the game whether to mill 2 cards off the top of your deck or start the game with 1 resource, you would absolutely mill 2 cards off the top of your deck, which pushes the choke and mill agenda. But it doesn't work that way. Your opponent basically gets an entire turn for free with no Newt effect. And with the meta the way it is, Newt could legitimately be dead by turn 1, which means nothing happened and his points aren't worth doing nothing. Like, you're paying those points for his effect, not his dice. His single die is not worth 8 points. I was disappointed because I was hoping that this could finally push villains into a good choke area, and it's just not quite there yet because Newt is a little bit too slow and a little less impactful than he needs to be.
I have to say that I was disappointed at Newt as well. He's not on my list, but we spoiled him. And when I saw him, I was very excited for his potential and what he could potentially do. The fact that he was unable to influence the meta and affect it is kind of disappointing, especially since I am looking forward to eventually playing some kind of villain mill choke control deck again. It would be nice to play Thrawn Unkar again eventually, hopefully in Infinite. My number 5 for my least favorite card is Final Moment. Final Moment is a heal red card that costs 4 that states ready each one of your character after the action phase and you lose the game. It's a very cool card. I like the artwork. It is nice to have it in the game, but it's very underwhelming paying 4 for that final swing. This is a card that you are not going to take in draft, and it just feels like a placeholder in limited. It would be nice for someone to win using this card, but I don't see it happening in paying 4 to. It's very powerful to each one of your characters, but I don't know, it just doesn't sit well with me.
Yeah, it's not a very impactful card anywhere right now. The only place I've seen it actually do work is in a multiplayer match, which the player who played it didn't win, but they kingmaked. And if you don't know what that means in board game terms, there's a style of play which you can do called kingmaking, where you don't win, but you expend all of your time, energy, and resources to let a specific player win. So essentially, you turn the game from everyone's on their own to a 2-1 or 2-everyone-else. Some people like doing that. I don't mind doing that every once in a while, just because if I can't win, I also don't want you to win, so I'll let somebody else win. That makes me feel good. So with the Final Countdown, its applications in Destiny are practically useless at this point in time. I would say if the game ever gets to a point where things are massively slow, I never foresee this happening, but if the game gets to a very like grindy crawl, you might be able to use this, but the problem is most of the time, half of your team is dead by like turn 3. So you're spending 4 resources to untap 1, maybe 2 characters. I mean, unless it's like a Ball of Teak loaded up, and if he's still alive, I don't know why, but it, like, that's the only character I can see. It's like a loaded up Ball of Teak, but you can't do it because it's Final Countdown. So it would have to be in draft of some sort. So yeah, I just don't see any application for this card legitimately right now.
Moving on to your number 4 least favorite card. What is your number 4?
Oh, this is a big one for me. So personally, I love Maul in the Star Wars canon. I love him in the films. I loved him in the TV show. I loved what they did in Clone Wars, and I really loved what they did in Rebels. I'm not going to spoil anything, because if you don't know what happens, you need to watch. That's all I'm going to say. It was beautiful, excellent writing. It was a really strong redemption for his character. But this card was the hype. And then we started playing with it, and it's very underwhelming. Now, like I've said in articles I've written and things we've talked about, I don't think Maul's place is in Legacies by himself. I do legitimately think Maul can potentially get a good partner. He's 12-16, 11 health, so we could see a 14-point red or yellow villain character, even a neutral character, that pairs extremely well with Maul, that can help kind of push him into a viability. But the problem is, he's just not in a good place right now. So 2 reasons I don't like Maul. One is the 3-for-1. I know that's fair, because he's such an inexpensive character. I don't know if he's the cheapest character that has a 2 3-for-1 damage suite, because Sabine is 20 and she's got a 2 3-for-1 damage suite. Vader's really expensive and he's got a 2-3 for free. So, I mean, I understand the concept of if his points are low, he shouldn't have a 2 damage for free, a 3 damage for free. Like, you should have to pay for that somewhere. So I feel like balance wise, that's fine. There's just not good money making in villain blue right now. So in order to actually pay for that, you're probably going to have to play villain yellow, which is where the money is going to come from. Okay, that's acceptable, but do you really want to pay $2 for 6 damage, especially when you could play something like Seventh Sister, where for $2 you can get another ID9 Seeker Droid? Those scale, there's a lot more. Anyways, like, when you're looking and assessing your resources and the value of a resource, $2 for 6 damage, I don't think in the current meta is as impactful as, say, saving those dollars, gaining a resource, and then paying 3 from Maul's Saber, which you can get massive value out of, and there's no pay sides, and it just keeps refilling itself on the board if there's no shield, and the value out of that die face, even though it's modified, is still astronomical. Whereas, say for example, if you had rolled Maul and you god rolled the 3 damage, 3 damage, and you pay 2 for 6 every turn, I don't feel like that's as impactful as if your first turn you play an ID9 Seeker Droid, your second turn with the next 2 resources you play another ID9 Seeker Droid, the next turn, like turn 3, you pay for maybe an Ancient Lightsaber. All of those cards, I feel, are going to bring much more value to your damage and your economy than 6-for-2, 6-for-2, 6-for-2. The other problem is his effect says after one or more of this character's character or upgrade dice are removed by an opponent's card effect, you may remove one of their dice. Really, really good effect. His effect is his strong point, realistically. But you have to see, the problem is you have to sequence Maul where your opponent has dice on the field they want to lose. And right now, that's also extremely difficult to sequence out, because with special chaining, most of the time your opponent can just get their dice off the table really quickly. Also, if Maul is the only character and they roll Maul out, you can just remove his dice and his effect doesn't trigger because he doesn't have any target to remove. You essentially have to roll out your weaker character and then your opponent rolls out somebody, then you roll out Maul. But then you have this problem. You have a lot of dice on the table and you're very susceptible to easy pickings and into the garbage chute. Now it's really bad because they're going to take 2 of your dice, and sure, you might get one of theirs, but if they rolled out their weakest character, now you have 2 characters characters rolled out. They have a character they may not care about with dice they may not care about. They still get your dice off the table. You take one of their dice that they don't care about, and you're still losing any kind of board state you want. And if you decide, oh, well, I need to roll Maul out to kill someone, then your opponent can just remove his dice and there's no punishment and his effect is useless. So it's just a really complicated mess where it's like, Maul's good, but not in the current state of the game.
I agree. Maul is another disappointing character card that there was a lot of hope for when it was first revealed, and that his potential is currently being unable to be explored due to how the meta is. My number four continues that story of disappointment. My number four is Bib Fortuna. Bib Fortuna is a yellow villain card that costs 9/12, 9 health, that has die size that are focus, disrupt, resource, special, blank. The special reads, roll a character die on one of your other characters into your pool. My disappointment with this card is I personally don't see a space for him. I am a big Thrawn Unkar player. Like I previously mentioned, I want to eventually play that Thrawn with Bio again, and I was hoping that we would get a yellow card that we could play that deck again. Obviously not as quote unquote broken, but being able to play that yellow red villain with Bio is something that I would like to do again. And when I saw Bib Fortuna, I'm like, okay, he's 9/12. But his die size, to me, are underwhelming for that deck that I want to play. My number four least favorite card is due to my personal expectations and my disappointment.
I actually like Bib's dice. I believe his weakness is in his cost. 9/12, it's not aggressive enough. Now, what I'm going to say, people might say, like, I'm totally insane. So I'm fine with that because it never happened. But something we haven't seen in a design space yet in Destiny is we haven't seen a unique character with only a single point cost, like the non-uniques. I really would have loved to see Bib at like 7 points for 9 health, but you cannot take him elite. Like, you only have one choice. You can pay 7 points for 9 health. That's it. Now, 7 is probably a little too aggressive, so I mean, if we split the difference, you could say 8. But I feel like you could theoretically create a strong or even powerful unique character, and then the way you limit them is that you only allow for a single die to be taken at a single point cost. So that way, you can't have two Bib dice. Say if he was pointed at 7, like 7 to 10, you couldn't bring 10 points of him for two dice. Like, that would be totally unfair, absolutely bonkers. But if you said, okay, here's a really good die, here's some really good health, here's a really good effect, but you only bring one of them, that would be, I think, a strong point to make more powerful and punchy characters without people spamming the board and just having these 5 and 6 die teams where, you know, you're rolling so many dice, you're just unstoppable.
I agree. I think that would be a fascinating design space for them to explore, and I hope that they do explore that space. Moving on to your number three least favorite card. What is your number three?
There's a lot of cards that are really disappointing to me, and mostly just because I wish they were better in terms of the game space. And I know this one's probably gonna get a lot of flack, but I actually very much am disappointed with Obi-Wan Kenobi again. Now, I should clarify, I like what he does, and I like what he is, but the reason I dislike Obi-Wan 2 is the reason I didn't like Obi-Wan number 1. His points are so freaking restrictive. And his dice are amazing, his effect is amazing, his health is very fair. Realistically, this is like a legendary tier character. 15, 19 is pretty expensive. 12 health for a rare, not very common. 3 damage for free, 3 damage for 1, also not very common. Double shields, resource, standard. But whenever he activates, you just get a shield. So your first activation, Obi is basically 13 health. So he's like, he's a Vader? Like, what? And he has, you know, a better damage suite than Vader. He's a 3 for free and a 3 for 1. Like, that's pretty impactful. If you get more shields on him, like, that's also impactful. Like, he's just this offensive defensive monster, which is good. He's at a really high point cost. Let's be honest, 15, 19 is really high. The 15 is fair. I really wish he might have been at like 15, 18, or even like, I know 14, 17 is probably way unfair. And if the Knights of Ren listen to this, they're going to just hate me. They're going to be like, that's just totally, no, it's broken. And the Obi-Wan decks would be everywhere. But I don't have a problem with that. I really like Obi-Wan. Like, this is kind of the same thing that I have a problem with Maul. Like, I like Maul as a character. I like his arc. I like his story. I like his character and personality. Like, Obi-Wan is my favorite Jedi just because he's almost not a Jedi. Like, he's very loyal to the Jedi cause, but he's also kind of aware that it's a little antiquated and he's aware that they do some dumb things. And he's also kind of like a little bit of a rebel. I mean, like he was trained by Qui-Gon. So he's got a little bit of that rebellion in him. Like, you know, Qui-Gon might have been right. Like some of these things don't make any sense. Anyways, back to the game. I feel that Obi-Wan should be one of the most playable characters. Like, for example, Yoda. Yoda is the most playable character because you can fit him in anywhere. He's amazing. He's interesting. And we're going to talk about him in our favorites because he's one of my favorites. And it's just disappointing that Obi-Wan doesn't have that option. He has very few character teams that are optimal. Like, sure, you can take him at one die and throw him in with other people, but you really want him at two dice. And with that 19 points, you only have 11 available points to play around with. And you're really limited to what you can take. And sure, you can do Obi-Maz, but that's not really one of the best things in the game right now. Like, if you could take him with double Ayla, that would be phenomenal. If you could take him with, you know, maybe a red character at elite that had, you know, aggressive sticks, that would be interesting too. Or even take him with some two smaller characters with Guardian or something. Like, I feel like it would be interesting to see Obi-Wan with two characters or another punchy character, because Maz is just a support. Like, she's just an enabler. So, I mean, you can't even take Obi-Wan with Master Yoda or Obi-Wan with Qui-Gon efficiently. Like, that's something I want to see. I want to see, like, theme teams where you can pair, like, masters and apprentices and you can, like, take them to the table and it's like, oh my gosh, like, Qui-Gon, like, Obi-Wan throws the shields on, Qui-Gon uses them for damage. Like, that would be a really cool deck that's not possible. And that's just frustrating for me because it's like, I know why he's not lower points, but I wish he was, just so we could see, like, not only powerful combinations, but, like, thematic combinations.
I wonder if he is one of those 0.5 cards. I wonder if his true cost is, like, 18.5, and they decided to round him up to 19 instead of rounding him down, because that was the most fair, if you will, choice that they could decide.
I think it's very possible. Like, he is pushing a lot of aggressive space, mostly with his health, his damage, and his effect. It's a really potent card. It's just, I don't foresee it going very far because its strongest pairing is with Maz, and the decks that are out there in the meta right now can really stop this deck. If they don't get upgrades really early on, sure, like, they're going to tank out with Obi's just shields everywhere, because Obi-Wan's very difficult to kill, but it's not impossible. It's just, I hate seeing a character that is extremely useful be trapped with one pair. Like, there is no other option that's viable. There's plenty of options that are fun, but if you're playing a competitive deck, you're not going to take anyone but Maz right now. There's just no better choice.
Hopefully we'll get a card that you can pair with him later in this block. Moving on to my number three. My number three, continuing the theme of kind of being underwhelming, is Night Sister Coven. Night Sister Coven is a villain support card that costs one, and its text effect reads, after a character die rolls a blank, you may exhaust this support to reveal the top card of a deck. If it cost is an odd number, deal one damage to that character. Again, I like the effect of this card, but there is so much that has to line up for it to be effective that paying one and relying on your opponent's character die to roll a blank for only one damage seems a little bit too convoluted for it to really be effective. I think it would be a fun card to play, like, in a fun casual deck, being able to put this out on the table, and then whenever your opponent rolls blanks or double blanks, you can exhaust it to deal a damage, but it just doesn't deal enough damage and is effective for it to be, I don't want to say playable, but usable. I mean, if it costs maybe zero, it probably would be too good, but at least you wouldn't have to invest a resource or some other sort of thing to make it a little bit more usable, I think would be my personal preference.
I completely agree. Now, I will say this. Now, this won't happen often, but I do draft this card in multiplayer, sealed or draft, and it's pretty impactful. It's not game-winning, but it is really obnoxious because the card does specifically state when a character rolls a blank. So it's not like initially on activation. It's just if something gets rerolled into a blank, that's very common. Like, people play like a Bamboozle or something that like mass rerolls everything, or even if your opponent pitches to reroll, you can trigger this card. Now, you do have to hope and pray that there's an odd number card on top of the deck, but because of the way draft works, it's not as reliable in terms of like building decks with the price points you want to pay for on cards. So it's more likely to actually hit an odd number card in a multiplayer draft than in a constructed game. Don't get me wrong, it's not going to construct it at all. Terrible. In multiplayer, for funsies, I would try it. If you don't like it, that's fine. But yeah, it's pretty unplayable.
Moving on to our number two. What is your number two?
Oh, this one hurt. So when we saw Grand Moff, it was like, oh my gosh, this card is really good. It's really expensive, but it's really busted. And then we saw Rebellion Leader. And it was like, why? Why did they print this card? So if you don't know a Rebellion Leader, it's 4 resources and the disappointing 4 resources. The effect is, for a power action, you can remove an opponent's die showing the same symbol as one of your dice. It's unique red character only. The die faces are really high, but really weird. 2 indirect damage, 2 focus, 3 focus, 2 discard, 3 shields, 2 resources. Okay, this card's really bad. It's really, really, really bad in standard constructed matches. It's even hard for me to want to take this in draft, and that's saying a lot. I mean, this is a really good die in draft. There's no misses. There's 2 and 3 focus and 3 shields. I mean, and 2 resources. Like, the 2 indirect is the weakest side, I think. The 2 discard is obviously my favorite, but having 2 and 3 focus is fantastic in sealed or draft. Then you have the shields, which is also good in sealed and draft because it gives you sustainability. The problem is, it's unreliable. And the power action is just, it's okay, but like, compared to the Grand Moff, and that might be the trap, is like, we're comparing this to the villain counterpart, which is just far, far superior. On its own, maybe if this was in, like, I don't know, even in Awakenings, it'd probably be bad. I just don't know. I really like seeing the Grand Moff title. It's like, okay, that's cool. The Grand Moffs are powerful. They're very scary. And then you have a Rebellion Leader, and you see one of the clutch characters from the show. You see Bail Organa, and it's like, why is his art for such a highly respected character in the canon such a lousy card? Once again, I like canon and theme relating to the game, so it's really frustrating to see, like, Bail on just a piece of poo-poo card.
I like the title cards. I like what they can bring to the game. I'm disappointed kind of with them so far. I think they are pretty decent most of the time, but they are not getting played, most of them, for a reason. And I did not add them to my list because I think those are an easy answer for a question like this, but I am disappointed, and I do agree with everything that you said. Grand Moff is definitely a lot better. Moving on to my number two. My number two is the ETA-2 Interceptor, which is a hero blue vehicle card that costs 3. Its die size are 1 range, 2 range, 3 indirect, 1 shield, 1 resource, and a blank. Its action is remove this die or one of your dice showing a shield to exhaust a support. I like the effect, but blue vehicles are very underwhelming and are just not good, especially compared to the blue villain's vehicles. Yes, the blue villain vehicles I don't see a lot of, but you can make a case that they are a lot more playable than the blue hero vehicle cards. I would like to see more blue vehicle cards be playable. I mean, they don't have to be like your Millennium Falcon or your Resistance Bomber, but they could maybe be a little bit more enticing. I don't know. I just never really look at blue vehicle cards because they are not impactful and there's no reason to run them.
I felt the same way too, and I would have agreed with you if I hadn't have done an interview with Christian yesterday at the Miami Regionals. He was in the top 8. He lost to Hero Mill, which is just a horrible matchup. As we all know, it's like almost impossible to win your vehicles versus Hero Mill. But he was running the ETA-2 Interceptor, and when he was going over why he picked that card, it did change some of my perspective. Now, we both agreed, and you can watch the video. This is on Facebook. So the ETA-2 Interceptor, he said, the strength of this card actually lies in the action effect, and it's something that a lot of people don't think about. He said it's almost very similar to Night Sister. It's underestimated, and it catches a lot of people off guard. So the action, remove this die or one of your dice showing a shield to exhaust a support. He said this is a very clutch play against the mill deck, because if you use this right in your sequencing, you can tap out your opponent's C-3PO, which they're going to use in conjunction with Chance Cube to eat cards out of your hand or just make some really, really crazy impactful plays. He said that's a really monstrous card play. The other thing is the action is not once per turn. So if you remove that die or you roll a bunch of shields, you can keep sacrificing those dice to tap out supports. And he was saying in the mirror match against hero vehicle versus hero vehicle, no one is playing the interceptor, and when you're sitting on a bunch of shields that you don't really need to use, being able to sacrifice those to the interceptor to turn off a resistance bomber, to turn off an additional C-3PO, to turn off maybe a modified Hawk, or even if they get something crazy out like a Ghost, a U-Wing, or a Millennium Falcon, that is a huge swing. One shield to turn off a support that could potentially win the game is absolutely worth it. But once again, like, do not play this card outside of hero vehicles. It's terrible, awful. But in that specific matchup, it is really good. And he was telling us when we were done with the recording, like, he told us like two games where that single interaction won him the game because the opponent didn't remember that the action is multiple times per turn. And so he would roll out shields, they wouldn't get mitigated. And he was like, cool, action, eat this shield die, tap out such and such. And the opponent was like, oh my God, what have I done? And then he rolled out the interceptor. And that's the thing, is the interceptor doesn't have to be rolled out. You can roll out your characters, then use the action, tap out the biggest threats on the table, roll out the interceptor. And if you get something you don't need, you can still use the interceptor's action to use that die to your advantage. Like, there's just value for days in a mirror matchup against vehicles or against C-3PO Mil.
Wow, I have to say that you definitely have brought me around on a card I didn't really think about that, and it's very nice to see that this card does have use, albeit very specific, but it's nice to see. So moving on to a final card for a least favorite, what is your final least favorite card?
All right, so some of my runner-ups are not limited to, but include Greedo for obvious reasons, Saw Gerrera for obvious reasons, I hope there. But this is one of the cards that actually crosses over on both lists, and I hope people understand why. This is actually my least favorite card in the set. It's also one of my most favorite cards in the set, and that is Easy Pickings. And I know that might sound very juxtapositional, which is probably not a word. Polarizing is probably a better word. But this card is way too freaking good. It's just way too freaking good. If you don't know what Easy Pickings is, it's a hero yellow card. It costs you $1, and it's just a really simple piece of removal. Spot a yellow character to remove two dice showing the same symbol and value, ignoring modifiers, resource costs. So if your opponent rolls out and they roll blanks, you can just Easy Pickings, $1, boom, two blanks are gone. They roll out massive damage. Like, this is a great card to hate on against Obi-Wan, because if they roll out double threes, you're like, oh, Easy Pickings, six damage is gone, and your turn is over, basically. There's so many things to say about this card in both the good and the bad. The bad being, so if you ever played Magic, I guess I can tell it as a story. There's been specific metas where there were, like, counter spells that were, I can't remember the name of the card, but it cost you either one blue mana or two life. And it was a counter spell that I believe, and someone who's listening and knows Magic is probably going to correct me, I believe it allowed you to counter any spell that cost one mana or less. The effect of the card isn't as relevant as the fact that when that card came out, there were, I believe, two or three major events for Magic. That includes regionals and PTQs. And 100% of the decks ran that card. It was so prevalent in the meta that Wizards had to do an emergency ban because it was just too freaking good. Like, literally, and I'm not kidding when I say 100%, like, the top 32 decks, every single player was running four of them because you could splash this into an off-color deck because you only had to pay the two life. And even if you ran it in a blue deck, you paid the two life, you did not pay the mana. So it was too efficient, it was too useful, and it was just too good. Easy Pickings, I feel, is the exact same thing, although it is not in 100% of the decks right now because it's in only a hero yellow. It is 100% in any hero yellow deck. And what's even worse is people are flocking to hero yellow decks because of this card. This card is so impactful and so powerful. People are actively choosing to play hero yellow just to gain access for this card because it does so many good things that are terrible. If your opponent rolls well, it's punishable. If your opponent flips into things and isn't able to resolve them quickly, it's punishable. If your opponent rolls really poorly, it's punishable. If your opponent rolls resources, it's punishable. Like, anything your opponent does, it's just punishable. That's great for the control players, but it's really bad for, like, the player base in general, because if you, like, roll out and you get damage you need, Easy Pickings feels really bad. If you roll out and you get double blanks, Easy Pickings feels really bad. If you just roll out and get two things you don't want, but they're the same symbol, Easy Pickings, oh my God, feels so bad. There's so many things that Easy Pickings does and creates in the game space that it's like, I'm really, really polarized because I love this card, and we'll talk about why I like it, but it's kind of pushing the meta to where people are playing hero yellow just because of the existence of this card.
It is one of my favorite cards. I really like Easy Pickings, but you definitely make some really solid points about why it is on the top of your list. Moving on to my final least favorite card. My least favorite card is Three Steps Ahead. This is another card that I think is really pointless. It is a red villain card that costs three, and you take three additional actions. I like its effect, but one resource per additional actions. Why not run Tactical Mastery instead? I love the artwork. Thrawn is awesome. awesome, but I don't really see it being used except in really niche situations. Three Steps Ahead is my least favorite card.
I agree. I feel like this card probably was like a 2.5, and they felt that $2 for three actions was unfair. A dollar per action is not bad. It's just, in the current meta, it's just unplayable. In a slower environment, say like a sealed or a draft, I don't know. I drafted this a couple times over the weekend because we fired off my cube a lot. And every time I pulled it, it was like, I think I'm going to make this happen. And every time I drew into it, I'm like, yeah, I don't really want to play this card. I just don't need it. I don't really want it. I mean, like, maybe with Hux, you could cheat it out for cheaper, but that's really combo heavy and unreliable. I'm not one to say, like, this is a card that is actually useful in any place in Destiny right now, but it could see something in a combo deck in the future. I would keep my eye on it, but right now, yeah, this is really, really bad.
Moving on to a top five favorite cards from Legacy. What is your number five?
Number five favorite card. Actually, all the cards on my list are like really high favorites. Once again, since this isn't in order, I'm just going to talk about Yoda because I've been waiting to talk about Yoda since we started. I love Yoda so much. Like, this guy is the jam. This guy is seagulls and a coconut. Like, this is my favorite character in any set outside of Jabba because, you know, it's Jabba. But he's just so good. He's 10-13, 10 health, 0% chance of failure. All of his dice sides are impactful. His disrupt is the worst side. And even that is impactful because eating money is just, as we've talked about before on Knights of Ren, when I go on my rant about economy. If you can disrupt your opponent and they can't play the card they needed to play, that wins games because now they have to make suboptimal decisions and they have to try and roll resources, which means less damage for you. And if you need to, gives you an extra turn or two to kind of stall them out. Plus, if they have to spend focus to flip or they have to spend cards to reroll, that one disrupt can just really swing games. It doesn't all the time, but it can. However, his special is really where Yoda is just super nasty. I'll just talk about the effect. So it says choose and do two of the following. You can only do one of each thing. Like, you can't do the same thing twice. You can gain a buck, gain a shield, flip a die to any side, or discard the top of a deck. Okay, that's really good. That's really good. Really good. Like, you can gain a buck. Okay, that's good. Gain a shield. That's also good. Flip a die. Action chaining. It's good. And then milling a deck. Also really good. Yoda is the ultimate toolbox character. He fits anywhere and everywhere. He doesn't do damage, which is good. He never really did. But he empowers any deck he's inside of with consistency, reliability, defense, economic pressure, even mill pressure. Like, he's just the perfect utility character, and I just love his design. Like, this is one of the few cards I feel like they nailed it right on the head. His points are good, his health is good, his die faces and effect are good. Like, this is arguably one of the few cards ever designed that is probably perfect in its balance, validity, and its impact on the game. We saw Yoda everywhere this weekend. He was in so many decks. Yoda's meta, which is good. I would have been very disappointed if Yoda had been printed and he was not playable.
Yoda is my number two. I really love him. I love what he does. I agree with what you were talking about how they nailed his theme and how he just seems so perfect. I know there's a lot of criticisms about his point cost and that he is everywhere, but even though he is everywhere, he's not winning everything. And even though he's in a lot of different decks, he's not in a specific deck strategy like your Phasma 2 used to be or your other aggro character cards. You can play him in a mill, you can run him in a mid-range, you can run him in a three-character, two-character. He is so versatile that, yeah, he's definitely my number two. My number five is Mother Talzin.
Yeah!
I really like what she brings to the table. I love the strategy of how her character card design affects your deck and how you approach your deck building. And it's one of the things that I think is new to Star Wars Destiny where a archetype is built into the game. I know that you are familiar with Yu-Gi-Oh! Yu-Gi-Oh! Has different deck archetypes. Back in my day, you had a Gladiator Beast, which that strategy revolved around tagging your monsters in and out of your deck. You had Lightsworn, whose archetype was built around discarding from the top of your deck. Infinity, where the whole strategy was based on having no cards in your hand. And that is why I like Mother Talzin, because Mother Talzin introduced those archetypes into Destiny, and I hope that we not only see this archetype get expanded, but we get more archetypes, because Yu-Gi-Oh! Hits that spot for me, and I hope that Destiny can capture a little bit of that. Hopefully we'll get more Night Sisters cards that build on this strategy.
Yeah, I'll put her in my top five because there's a lot of cards that I love in this deck. And Mama Talzin is definitely one of them. Yeah, everything you said. I was going to say, like, with Magic and Yu-Gi-Oh!, which I'm actually getting back into Yu-Gi-Oh! Because it's in a really good place right now. And they unbanned, another tangent, but they unbanned Monster Reborn and Solemn Judgment. So, you know, if you remember what those do. But that is another day, another dollar. Mama Talzin and Yoda, the reason why I like them a lot is because of their ability to build around the character. And this is like the exact opposite problem I have with Obi-Wan. Like, Obi-Wan's too expensive. Mama Talzin and Yoda are the perfect point cost, and you can put a lot of different combinations with them. And people are so excited about Yoda because you can throw him into so many different decks, and they may not be meta, but if you're going to a casual night or you're playing with friends, like, that doesn't matter. Like, you don't play to necessarily win, you play to have fun. But the problem is, like, you can't play for fun with Obi-Wan because, once again, he still doesn't have a partner that's good. But Yoda just fits everywhere, and Mama Talzin does the exact same thing. Like, you could see her with Kylo too. We saw her with Tarkin that got to the top eight. Like, what the heck? Also, we did a deck profile with the guy who piloted that deck, and it was incredible. Like, the cards in that deck were amazing. He played out to Talzin's effect, where he was getting the consistency. Mama Talzin has so many outs. Like, she's so cool because you have the damage sides, a focus, a mill, like a discard. Like, oh my gosh, it's so good. A resource, and then a blank. And her special says, after you activate this character, you may reveal the top card of a player's deck, you or your opponent, if it costs an odd number, then turn one of that player's dice to any side. Oh my gosh, it's so good. She's got focus and a free flip. If you build her deck right, that's really good. But what's even cooler about this character, if you ever played AEG's Doomtown, you know that that was a CCG where they used symbols for poker in the top of the card. So you'd have a character with an effect. Basically, imagine if you had like Magic Yu-Gi-Oh! Pokemon, but then at the top left or right of the card, you would also have one of the standard poker symbols. So hearts, spades, diamonds, blue moons, horseshoes, lucky charms, and then you'd have a number. So what you would do in Doomtown is, as you were playing the game and you would have conflicts, you would build a poker hand, and then whoever had the highest hand would trigger special effects or win combat. So there were some decks that would have 100% of a single suit, so you were guaranteed a flush every single time you played. So you would always have a flush, a flush, a flush. So you could mitigate the randomness of your deck by building into your strength. Some decks played only flush. Some decks played only high cards, so they were trying to shoot for straights or royal flush or royal like straights of. It was just really neat because you were playing a game and you had luck, but you could mitigate the luck in your deck construction. So Mama Talzin does a similar thing. You can build a deck with 100% odd cards, and that means Mother Talzin will flip every single time. You activate her, you target yourself, it's going to be an odd card, and that means you get to flip a die to whatever you want. Like, that is neat. Because once again, going back to that theme, like, you can theme your deck to odd cards, use Mother Talzin to her maximum efficiency, and just really hurt the opponent. Also, some of the really good cards in the game right now are odd, which is cool, but also bizarre. Maul Saber is odd. That's really good. Witch Magic is odd. It's really good. All of the removal for Blue Villain cost one. For the longest time, we complained, like, why does removal always cost one? I still complain, like, villains need zero drop removal, so thank God for Hidden Motive. But still, like, that plays into Mama Talzin's effect. Like, if you flip into an isolation, okay, my next card is removal, and I get to flip a die. Like, oh, that's really good. No complaints there. So I love Mama Talzin and what she does, and especially how deck builders and deck technicians can, like, use her as a starting point and, like, kind of build around her and create this really unique villain deck.
You can definitely tell that we love Mother Talzin. Before we move on, I would like to post a quick question. Do you think that there is a place in Mill or Control for Mother Talzin?
Not right now. I believe in my heart and hope that once sets 2 and 3 come out, yes, I am going to be really surprised once we get the next block. So you know how Awakenings was black and Legacies is white. Let's say block 3 is like blue. She's such an impactful character. I cannot foresee her not being a meta, not necessarily like a meta staple, but like a meta option. She just gets better as the game goes because you're going to get more odd cards that are more impactful. I mean, look at Hidden hidden motive that's a zero that's really impactful. You can't use it with Mother Talzin, but it's really good. But also look at things that heroes have, like Easy Pickings and Into the Garbage Chute. Those are odd cards. And if a villain ever got cards like that, which that would be insane. Mother Talzin with odd cards that have the same two removal for a dollar that Garbage Chute and Easy Pickings do. Woo, that's going to be a nasty control deck. Like right now, today, probably not.
Since Mother Talzin is on your list as well as mine, we're going to go ahead and gloss over your number four. My number four is, I think, on your list as well. I love what he brings to the game, and I love the mind game that it can bring to your opponent. And I think that this is a card that Lucas wanted to bring to the game, and I think Jeremy helped the design of this card. Without teasing him any further, we are, of course, talking about everybody's favorite character, not Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah, he's on my list, all right.
I love how when you start out with this character, you immediately start out with a mini game that you can engage in your opponent, because not only can your opponent activate him, but obviously you can activate him. And knowing when to activate him, when your opponent should activate him, I feel like it engages the players like no other card really has. And I wish that he would see more play. Props to Rebel Spy for taking him into a top 8. I love that one of the most controversial characters in Star Wars is one of the most interesting and engaging cards in Star Wars Destiny.
Jar Jar Binks is just, he's a monster in terms of mind games, because you're playing a dice game that's really risky. I mean, if we're really, really honest about it, like, you can pitch to reroll, you can use focus, you can use effects, but it's still a dice game, and you could just get blanks all day long. Like, if you're super unlucky and everything goes wrong, or someone just magnetizes your dice and you just roll blanks every day, like, that's bad. But that's something you have to consider every single time you play and every action you take. And then you're sitting across from Jar Jar, and it's like, wait, so if I roll really good, they're going to activate Jar Jar and get a sound the alarm on me. And the worst part is, sometimes you don't actually need damage. Like, you need shields or you need money so you can keep your combo and your tempo going. And you might roll out and be like, oh, sweet, I rolled 3 resources. I need these to play this upgrade or this support. And then your opponent says, all right, Jar Jar Binks. And you're like, oh, no. And, you know, you might roll damage or shields or disrupt or things you don't actually want. And sure, damage is viable and these other things are viable, but if you need money, he just disrupts things you need. Of course, you're going to roll damage and they're going to roll Jar Jar to stop you, but if you try and like outplay your opponent and try and do like strange things, the Jar Jar play can just really mess with you. And yeah, it's a really impressive thing that Mike was able to go through San Diego with Jar Jar to top 8. I wouldn't be surprised if other high level players are able to get Jar Jar to the table. It is risky because he's so squishy, but I mean, like, especially in like sealed events, like, he's Jar Jar is really good in draft, I think. He's really good because he gets you yellow. He's a low point cost, so you have a lot more floating to be able to use more expensive characters. And if you don't get expensive characters, you can use plots, which is also really good. But once again, his dice aren't really that impactful. It's his effect that makes him just super annoying.
I think in the limited format, he is one of the most fun cards to play. I remember watching a game in a draft tournament that I was playing in, and a guy had 2 character dice that had a blank, and he activated Jar Jar to hope that he could reroll his dice, and his opponent had, I think, some damage or whatever. And what does he roll? He rolls a blank, and it was hilarious because he was hoping that he would be able to use Jar Jar for that free roll and that free disrupt. But it didn't go his way. There was just something about that moment in the draft setting that was very entertaining. And there are very few character cards outside of the normal flow of the game that engages that level of entertainment.
Yeah, Jar Jar is a lot of fun, especially in multiplayer. Jar Jar is really scary, especially when... In this one game we were playing this weekend, one of my friends, it was actually Andrew Larcher, the guy who took second with Mill, he was playing with vehicles, and he got a resistance bomber, and he was showing the 6 indirect for 2, and then he had a dark advisor who has the, yeah, he has the indirect damage side as well, and there was something else, he might have had a rose, so I think he was showing 6, 7, 8, 9, or 10 indirect damage, and my other opponent was like, alright, activate Jar Jar, because I don't want to deal with that, because I only had one character, Ketsu, left, and so I rolled the Jar Jar, and I had a bunch of dice out, and they were all really bad. They're like, so I roll it out, and then Jar Jar rolls the indirect damage, and it's like, oh! because the one die face he needed to not get rolled got rolled, and he died. He took indirect damage, and it was so funny because you're like, Jar Jar, you disappoint me again.
I think that if you do a content creator free for all at Worlds again with a whole bunch of people, like, everybody should bring Jar Jar.
Oh, no. No one will resolve anything. It's just going to be rerolls and rerolls and rerolls.
Oh my god, make it happen. Definitely.
That would be fun.
So moving on to our number three. What is your number three favorite card?
It's starting to get a little flooded because there's a lot of cards I like. They did a really good job in this game. And I have to say, I love Tarkin. This guy is ridiculous. Not in terms of OMG tier zero meta defining, but he's a utility character who is very good. He's a little more expensive than I like. Once again, I wish he was 13-15. It's never going to happen, but whatever. Or even like 12-15, but that would be way too low. His health is great. 11 health for those points. Fantastic. The die faces are where he shines like a boss. I mean, like, you're paying 13-16 for his power action, which is also very good. Really good. But his die faces are 2 indirect, 1 focus, 2 focus, 2 discard, $1 blank. His power action is remove 2 of your dice showing the same symbol to deal 4 indirect damage to an opponent. That's great for mid-range and aggro decks, but his dice are really, really a strong suit because he's good for mill, he's good with Jabba, he's good with Seventh Sister, he's good with Talzin, and as we keep going, like, if we keep getting these elite characters that are 14 or less, and I'm actually working on a Tarkin and Dr. Aphra build right now, trying to figure out if that even works. Not sure, it might, I don't know, not there yet, but the more elite characters we get at 14 or less, like, Tarkin just, he really empowers those characters to do what they want when they want it. And that's kind of a big thing that Destiny needs right now. Like, there's a lot of these singular characters that exist and they do a thing by themselves, like Zeb. So the Swamp Thing deck is Zeb Yoda. Zeb is really good, but he's really too freaking expensive and he can't do it by himself. He needs a partner to help empower him. That's where Yoda comes in. Yoda can help do the exact same thing Tarkin does. You do the focus, you do the disrupts, you do the discards. Like, you kind of keep your opponent off track long enough for your primary character to just kind of punch him in the face. So the more lower point cost characters we can get that Tarkin can empower, I think Tarkin will see a lot of viability if that happens. If we keep getting these really high impact, high cost characters, Tarkin is definitely going to fall off, because if we ever get like a Yoda style character for villain, like, Tarkin's just not going to be playable because we don't need him. But right now, he's a very, very useful toolbox character.
I have to say that I also like Tarkin. I also have been looking at him in decks, and I haven't quite perfected a deck list that I really like concerning him, but he is definitely one of my favorite characters from the set. He's not on this list, but I like what he brings to the game, and I hope we see more of him because I really like what he brings to the table and his power action. So moving on to my number three. My number three is one of the cards I talked about in my last episode, and that would be Vandalize. Vandalize is a neutral yellow card that costs 1, and it affects states. Remove a number of your character dice equal to the cost of a support or upgrade in play to discard it. I really like the control that this card brings to the table. I love that, for one, you can remove any number of your character dice to discard a support or upgrade in play, as long as you remove an equal amount of dice to the card that you want to discard.
Yes, I agree. This is another polarizing card for me. This would have been my number 6 on the disappointment list. It falls into the exact same problem I have with Easy Pickings. It's pushing people to play yellow, but because yellow hero is better than yellow villain right now, it's basically a yellow hero card. If anyone plays yellow, you have to play Vandalize. There's no argument about the card. You could say mill, hero mill doesn't, but they could, but they need their dice. So that's the only deck that you're really not wanting to play Vandalize in, just because in hero mill, you only get 3 dice. And boy, howdy, like, losing a die is just so painful. But if you're playing yellow, anything not mill, you have to run Vandalize. And I like it because this is the kind of removal that we should have had way early on in the game. This is the kind of stuff that I think would have made Vibroknife not as scary, because you could just Vandalize it away. Sure, it's really powerful, but, you know, 2 character dice to get rid of a Vibroknife is a fair trade, I think. Vandalize is great because you can get rid of 0 drops like Force Speed, Chance Cube, all kinds of high impact cards. You especially need Vandalize right now to get rid of that C-3PO play. because mill decks without C-3PO will lose the game. It's very hard to win without the C-3PO combo. It is a meta warping and meta defining card. It's not unfair. This is one of the most probably fair-ish types of cards in the game because you have to pay a dollar and get rid of your high impact dice, because as we've said before in previous shows on Knights of Ren, like, your character dice are usually doing most of the work. There are some rare exceptions like Maul Saber and like Obi Saber and, or even like Heirloom Saber, like these big it's mostly lightsabers or guns, heavy impact guns. Most of the damage comes from your character dice, with some exceptions of very, very powerful upgrades. But if you're forcing players to get rid of their best dice on the table or most reliable dice on the table in order to have some kind of powerful removal or kill spell kind of effect, since you can't kill characters, this would be a kill spell for like their upgrades. It needs to be a fair trade, not just pay like a dollar and that's it. Paying a dollar and losing a die is really good, especially if you're getting rid of a two cost thing. Like, losing two dice is also very good. I like this card a lot, but I also don't like the fact that it's so good that people are prioritizing yellow over other colors because of these cards. I feel like every color should have a viable card that makes you want to play the color. And the problem is right now, like, red is just not a color you want to play right now because blue is so good and yellow is so much better.
Since Jar Jar is on your list, like it was mine, and Yoda was on my list that was also on your list, we are going to go ahead and skip our number twos, if that is okay.
Yep.
What is your favorite card from Legacies?
My favorite card, I'm actually going to cheat here. It's both Easy Pickings and Into the Garbage Chute, just because these are the best removal cards in the game, hands down. Easy Pickings is superior to Garbage Chute, but the biggest thing is both of these cards, you pay a dollar, you pay a fee, so to speak, and then you remove two dice. Unheard of in Destiny. Everything has been a one for one. You had the two for one with Negotiate, but your opponent could pick, so it wasn't as bad. But like right now, in Heroes, and only Heroes, and only Hero Yellow, you can have four cards that eat two dice. That is insanity. That's just crazy good, like super freaking good. I can't even explain. Like, if you've never been hit with an Easy Pickings and then hit with an Into the Garbage Chute, I don't wish it on my worst enemy, but if you ever have that happen to you, you will understand just how impactful two cards and $2 really are. Those two cards, if they're played in conjunction, can just basically end the turn. Like, you're done. You have nothing. I think that's really good for the control players, because we've been crying for good control options since the start of the game. Everything for Heroes has been like Loth, Cat, and Mouse, which is bad. Negotiate, which is bad. And, you know, villains always got things that were just super good. Like, he doesn't like you. And we're like, we need something really good. And then we get Easy Pickings. And it's like, whoa, that's like really, really good. I like the fact that these cards bring longevity to decks. The game is definitely slowing down, and the biggest reason I like these cards is because it gives non-aggressive decks a chance to survive. The only problem with it is it also gives aggressive decks a chance to kill you faster, or slow you down to a point they can kill you faster. So it's kind of an unfair, like, you know, it's not like only a specific deck gains access to this card, like in Magic or in Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, it's not like a specific archetype or a specific color that can utilize it. I mean, technically it's a specific color, but it's a lot easier to use the colors in this game than I would say in Magic, just because of the mana restrictions, as opposed to in this game. You just have to have a yellow character showing, like not dead, and you can Easy Pickings. And so, you know, in vehicle decks or mill decks, you always have a yellow character. As long as they're not dead, you hit them with Easy Pickings. That's a huge swing. And of course, with Garbage Chute. Now, Garbage Chute, I think, is much more fair. You pay a dollar, you tap a character that's untapped, and you get rid of two dice showing damage. So like Easy Pickings, you have to spot a yellow character, but you can get rid of any two dice showing the same symbol, so it doesn't have to be damaged, whereas Garbage Chute must be damaged. So if you're playing against like a mill deck, it's a totally dead card. So they both have strengths and weaknesses, but the biggest thing that makes these cards so defining, in unless they get banned, which they probably won't, and they won't get eroded, I don't foresee happening for the foreseeable next two blocks, Legacies and block number three, these will be defining removal spells. I mean, unless we get something for zero or less restrictive, like, these are going to be in play for like the foreseeable future forever.
My number one is actually Edie Pickings as well. And you hit the nail on the head. Edie Pickings, in my opinion, is the best removal that we have right now, alongside the best defense and into the garbage chute. One for removing two dice is so powerful that, like you previously mentioned, it entices people to play Yellow Heel. It is one of those cards that you could make the case that it is too good, but it is a card that I really love because I love being able to remove dice for one and selecting two. There is just something so powerful about being able to do that, that is why it is our favorite card from Legacies.
I'm going to be doing some videos. We're going to be talking about this card just because it's changed the game. And I don't know if that's for good or for bad, because like we wanted heroes to be good for so long. Like the Awakenings and Spirit of Rebellion block were just god awful for heroes. It was unplayable. Like heroes just weren't ever going to hit the table. And of course I can hear people saying, well, what about Pomaz? Yeah, Pomaz, that was a thing, but it just got nerfed really quick. And it still wasn't a hero meta. It was a villain meta with Pomaz. And so now we're in the complete opposite. And it's like, great, heroes are great. Like, I want to play heroes. I'm a villain player. Like, I would rather play villains over heroes. But I've wanted to play heroes because it was a completely unplayable archetype or set or deck, whatever you want to call it. And now it's like, they're too good and villains have been pushed out. Now, they're topping, but they're not winning. Okay, I should say they're not winning consistently. Like, villains have made it. Like, OTK has made it and won. We've seen five die villain win. But I'm saying, like, if you look at the overall spread of decks winning, it's much, much heavier heroes than it is villains. And I don't think that's a bad thing, but I also don't like the fact that I have to play very specific villain decks to be competitive, whereas there's a ton of hero decks I can play that are competitive. Like, there's a mill deck. Holy crap, that's amazing. There's a mid-range to slow long game vehicle deck. I also like these options, but I would also like to have these options in villain. We said this on Knights of Ren. It would be really nice to see like the 50-50 spread of I can play a villain control deck, I can play a hero control deck, I can play a villain vehicles deck, I can play a heroes vehicles deck. Like, I want to see all of these types of decks available to both sides, not just heroes, 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 and then the next meta villains, 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 villains. Because like, there's people who only collect a specific side, and that just sucks if your side is unplayable. Now, I know that's a part of card games and that's how these things work. Like, if I played Magic, Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon, Destiny, the Star Wars Deciphering, I'm like, this happens in card games. There's specific types of decks, there's specific colors, there's specific whatever you want to call it, that are just super popular, super powerful, and have the best support. And the cards and types and decks and things you may want to play don't have the support, and they just aren't competitive. That sucks. But Destiny is one of the few games I feel that could be fairly close to 50-50 in balance. It's probably going to be like a 70-30, 60-40, but it could be a lot closer than where it is right now, where it's always been like, I would probably say 80-20. Like, early game, it was 80-20 villains, 80-80-80, and now it's definitely like 80-20 heroes. If we could kind of bring those numbers a little bit closer to 50-50, I think that'd be great for the players. I think that'd be great for the game. But when you have cards like Easy Pick that are so much better, that's going to obviously push people to play heroes, because that is like the best card in the game right now. So why wouldn't you play it?
It is now time to wrap things up. I would like to say thank you for Grayson for providing such an interesting topic to talk about. That topic that you suggested was so engaging that we were able to fill a podcast and a half full of content. Unfortunately, we were not able to get to everybody who suggested topics, but we thank you for everyone who suggested ideas. And thank you so much, Sugi, for giving us so much content on your top five favorite and your top five least favorite cards from Legacies.
I can answer Jim's question really quick on the state of villain decks, if that's okay.
Go for it.
Okay, state of villain decks, not great. Mostly because of what we talked about today, but also just because, like, all their cards that came out were just severely, I think, overcosted. Kylo 2 is probably going to see a resurgence if Sabine gets popular, just because if Sabine is a monocolored deck, Kylo 2 will come back to counter that, and then we're going to see, you know, all these rock, paper, scissors. Hero Mill beats Hero Vehicles. Hero Vehicles can beat Sabine. Kylo 2 can beat Sabine, but Kylo 2 loses to potentially mill or vehicles. In a nutshell, the state of villain decks is they're kind of the rogue option based on what's popular in the meta, but they're not the dominant force, which for villain players is very disappointing. But for deck technicians, it's probably an interesting challenge, because they can't just take a villain deck to a store or a tournament and win outright. You have to put some thought and get your reps in to figure out how a villain deck can beat the meta, because the meta will be be dominated by heroes purely because of these cards we're talking about. Easy Pickings is just, it's going to be played, and villains have no card even close to that. So heroes are going to be out there playing Easy Pickings to just cut you off from doing whatever you want. But there is potential, but there's no domination.
My add-on to that is the villain deck is the place to go for creativity and diversity. There are so many different strategies for villains compared to hero, it seems like, that if you are a creative person and you want to experiment, then I highly recommend looking at villain decks. There is a lot of potential there to come up with something to take the next regional and maybe win worlds. If you are looking for something to change it up, I would definitely recommend checking out villains. I'm hoping that we get to that 50-50, like you said, but don't count villains out yet, because they still have potential and they have a lot of good stuff, including but not limited to Mother Talzin.
Absolutely.
Concluding everything, thank you again, Tsugi, for coming on and talking. I had so much fun.
Yeah, I had a blast. I love coming on and just talking about Destiny and answering your questions. Thank you to all the Patreons who voted for me. Like, that's great. I appreciate that. Like, that was a really neat thing to get in a Facebook message. It's like, hey, we're doing a pick the next guest and you go on. I'm like, oh, hey, that's cool. So yeah, thank you to all the Patreons. Thank you to everyone who's listening. I love Destiny. I love the community. I love talking about the game. And I love what we do as like a family. Like, we all kind of hang out. We play this game. We talk. We goof off. We hang out, we laugh, and we have a good time together. Like, that's all we did yesterday at the regional was, you know, people who were winning, people who were losing, you know, between games, we were just talking, like shooting the breeze, talking about Star Wars, talking about sports, talking about what we're going to have for lunch, like strategies. It was more than just the game, it was community. And that's amazing. That's the best part about this game, is it's more than just the cards. It's about the people.
That is such a perfect way to leave this podcast off, that I would hate to wreck that, but I have to ask you, if people would like to contact you, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me in Orlando. I live in a house with some cats. If you're trying to figure out where to find me on the internet, now that's a different thing altogether. So you can find me at Knights of Ren Podcast or on Facebook. If you're looking on, say, Twitter or Instagram, it's KOR Podcast. You can find us, we're on Reddit. We have a YouTube page, which we're going to start doing some videos. I'm actually working on that deck tech stuff later today, where I'm going to be talking about Vandalize, Into the Garbage Chute, and Easy Pickings, because those cards are just so good. But yeah, we're pretty much everywhere. Look up, you know, Knights of Ren Podcast, and you should find us pretty easily. We have a podcast that we do every week. We're going to be recording ours later tonight, actually, so it'll be coming out in a couple days. Keep an eye out for that. If you haven't joined us, just give us a listen. I sincerely think you're going to enjoy what we have to say. Season 5 has been out of control insane. Our first episode is one of our most downloaded and listened to episodes ever. We had Eric Wainwright come on, and he took the Dallas Regional with Ayla Padawan. And although the deck right now might not be in a great place, like, it's playable and people were playing it at the regional yesterday, just the wisdom and insight that Eric had about the game will make you a better player. I met a lot of people at my weeklies and at the regional who came up and said, I listened to that episode and I made some significant adjustments to my economy based on what Eric had to say. And they're telling me how they're winning games, they're able to deal more damage, or they're able to get their upgrades out faster and more impactful upgrades because they understand how to use their resources. Like, Eric had a really, really, really deep thought about the value of a resource and how it scales each turn and how it gives you the best bang for your buck in turns one that you don't get past turn three. If you haven't listened to it, it's episode 503, We Are the Peacekeepers. I absolutely recommend listen to that interview. If you don't want to listen to the whole podcast, I think the interview starts like 30 minutes or something, and he talks for like 25, 30 minutes or so, and there's just so much insight. You have to listen to that. It will improve your game, I promise.
I can second that, and you guys have been knocking it out of the park. That concludes this episode of I Rebel. Thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you all next time. This has been I Rebel, a Star Wars Destiny podcast. I have been your host, Jedi Geek Girl. If you would like to contact me, please send me an email at irebeldestiny@gmail.com. And as always, may the Force be with you.
I Rebel is an independent podcast, not associated with Lucasfilm, Disney, Fantasy Flight Games, or any other organization. All copyrights for Star Wars, Star Wars Destiny, and all other properties belong to the proper copyright holders.